Hello and welcome back to another episode of Scottish Football Covered. I am Stefan, joined by Archie, Robbie and Finlay. Archie, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Like we just talked about, 6-3 for Liverpool against Spurs. So a bit down in the dumps, but ready to talk about some Scottish football.
So let's go from a low to a high. Robbie, how you doing?
Brilliant. Honestly, couldn't be better. But yeah, like you say, we are here to talk about Scottish football, and I think there was a lot of good results to talk about this week.
Finlay, what about yourself? You hear us all the way out there?
Yeah, I can. I'm from a distance, properly on the West Coast. Just like the others, I'm very excited. I mean, it wasn't the best weekend in football, but still a lot to talk about.
At least your team won. They did win, didn't they?
Whoever that is. No, we did. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
Did the double over the mighty Crystal Palace. I mean, I don't want to get into it too much, but showing we can score from everywhere and in Jesus we trust is my message.
Okay, but we can go with that. I'm happy. Let's start off in the Premiership, but let's start somewhere that maybe people aren't expecting us to start. Let's start with Hearts versus St Johnstone. Everyone going into this match was thinking it's a massive game for Hearts. They're taking on St Johnstone, who are not in the greatest run of form, but Hearts just in midweek got eliminated from the UEFA Europa Conference League. Literally 25th out of 24th. Unbelievable scenes in Gorgie on Thursday night. But they took on St Johnstone today and they ran out 2-1 winners, which takes them right up the table and takes them into 10th. So they're out of relegation. Massive, massive result for Hearts, Finlay.
No, definitely. That I know it's early days for Neil Critchley, but he. I mean, I'm maybe being critical. He should be doing a fair bit better. I know they're off the bottom of the table, but you mentioned that draw and their elimination from the Europa Conference League. I read something which was that the town where Petra Club are from, Hinchati, has a smaller population than Gorgie. So I know Europe is not the be all and end all, but I thought that was such an embarrassing exit. Such a weak way to go out, and I'm very disappointed this year by the way Scottish teams outside the Old Firm have done in Europe, and I expect a lot more. So I think a win here was the least he could have done, and maybe on the other side, someone who started off well, Simo Vallecari, now things are looking a little bit shaky after a loss there.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of the most embarrassing results in Scottish football's European history. Rangers in progress, Nidarkorn in 2017, Celtic and Artmitia Bratislava in 2005, even Motherwell in 2022. They get eliminated by League of Ireland sides Sligo Rovers. Like, is there no end to even Kilmarnock? I think got eliminated by the New Saints. Or was it the New Saints? It was a Welsh side, a few years back under Angelo Alessio. It's bad from a Scottish perspective in Europe, because if you look at where Hearts were 2-3 games ago, they should have absolutely been qualified. Okay, they lost to Copenhagen. You know, better teams in Scottish football have also lost to Copenhagen. There's no shame in that. But as you say, to lose to a team who are, I think they were from Moldova. Yeah, pretty scandalous. But a positive result today. Robbie, Archie, what about yourself? Start with you, Robbie.
Yeah, obviously it's a big result. It's a very needed result. I think in terms of the elimination from Europe, although it seems like a bit of a kick in the teeth now, I do think it might be a little bit of a blessing in disguise. It just takes off a little bit of that extra pressure. It takes some of the games away. It takes a bit of the kind of fixture congestion away from Hart's schedule, and it means that they can now kind of really focus on the league and hopefully on, you know, picking up some more points and going from here, because I think they did look good against St Johnstone today. So yeah, it's a really positive result for them.
Archie.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this climbed them off the bottom of the table. Of course, I think they looked maybe a bit wobbly in the second half of today, but what they've leapfrogged Temp now, I think they leapfrogged Ross County now. So, I mean, that's, brilliant for them. Like we've talked about with the Conference League exit, it's never good, of course, to be out of another competition. But like Robbie just said there, wind off the sails a little bit, pressure's maybe off them, and coming off of the bottom of the table is even more pressure off them. So, VAR had some interventions in this game, of course, which I know we're going to talk about. But, the finale of it, whilst it was still nervy, it's what the Hearts fans needed. They wanted that bit of certainty, and I think they were able to get that today. So, yeah, really important win for them, definitely.
Yeah, a good end to a pretty abysmal week. Okay, let's move on to St Mirren versus Ross County versus St Mirren. That ended in a 2-1 win for the visitors on Saturday night, despite being down to 10 men. I feel bad for Ross County because again, they're a team that are now in that relegation fight. Hearts have just leapfrogged both them and St Johnstone. St Johnstone obviously occupying the bottom spot, Ross County in the playoff spot. It all feels like it's just maybe going wrong for Ross County now, Robbie.
Yeah, I think it's quite a worrying result for Ross County. I think they've got one win in the last eight, and they've not looked particularly good in any of those games. Even you look at St Mirren's first goal, it's totally preventable with just some terrible goalkeeping from Jack Hamilton, and then they just seem to be not being able to find the back of the net. Right towards the end of the game, I think it was missed an absolute sitter, which would have put them 2-1 up at the time. So it just seems to be like just an accumulation of just the same things happening week in, week out, and it's really not looking good for them. I think the kind of beauty of the Scottish League, beauty for a neutral, and maybe not so beautiful for if you're a Ross County fan, is that if teams like Hearts and Hibs start to pick up a few points, if you have a few bad results, you can be right down there again. So yeah, I do think it is quite worrying for Ross.
Okay. Archie, what about yourself?
Yeah, no, I think the most interesting thing after this game was that both managers had a really good respect for one another. Both were really critical of their own performance. Robinson had plenty to say about the penalty claims, of course, that particular one that came off the line and into the defender's face. But I thought it was the right result for them. I think for County now it is a bit of a sinking ship. I think it's important to mention, of course, they had that double bill of Rangers and Celtic in the earlier match weeks. But once you're out of the woods, you've got to come out swinging. And with these next run of fixtures, I think they really have to try and establish themselves, try and pick up a few points. But this game today had a really unorganised feel to it. So of course the red card didn't help as a counter argument towards that, but one team's trash was another team's treasure, so better late than never, I suppose, to get up a win. But yeah, for Ross County, it's not a great look on their form right now.
Finlay, what about yourself?
No, it's true. Ross County desperately needed to get results here. Their away form is, to say the least, woeful. I don't think they've won away since September 2023. So they've been relying on home wins to pick up points. And I just think, even more than relying on home wins, they've relied on Ronan Hill to get goals. He didn't start against Hibs last week. He's got 5 goals. The closest, Jordan White, has about 2. So it's the lowest scoring team in the league by a bit. Not scoring goals. They're not creating chances either recently. So Ronan Hill's not even getting any service. He's waiting for the ball. Nothing's happening. So it's not like Ross County have been unlucky in defeat. They've not given themselves any chance to win. And I think they're just lacking the kind of creative players or players who are willing to take risks going forward, because at the moment, they're just happy to see games out and then be maybe plucky losers. And what that's going to do is send them right back down into the bottom two and make them a very unattractive proposition for players. So they have, I think, a more work to do than any other side in this league. I would say they're furthest away from generating wins.
Okay, no, that's absolutely fair. What about St. Mirren? Great result for them. Puts them right back up the table into the top six. They're now 5 points clear of Dundee. We spoke about how Stephen Robinson and Don Cowie had a great respect for each other, but that result's going to mean a lot to Stephen Robinson, Archie.
Yeah, absolutely. It will definitely mean more for him. I think he'll be really happy with the way his team, perhaps, fighted in that fought in that game. And I think it was a slow burning game anyway. Smith's free kick at the end, dramatic fashion, and the fans, I think, always appreciate that. So he's maybe got a bit of a barrier around the game now, I suppose. It's a nice way to end a game like that. But St Mirren couldn't capitalize on any chances that they had, and I think Ross County just didn't capitalize as well as St Mirren did. So yeah, it's good for Robinson is what I'm trying to say, but it's not they'll want better and they'll want more, as of course any team does. So I think now that they've entered that top six part of the table, it's really important now that they try and prove that even more.
Okay, let's move on to another game from Saturday night or Saturday afternoon. Aberdeen versus Hibernian. Hibs ran out 3-1 winners. If you had said that 6, 7, 8 weeks ago, people would have said Aberdeen are going to absolutely run through Hibs, and there's nothing that David Gray's side can do about it. Now we're looking at Aberdeen have lost ground in the title race. And have dropped to third place. How much of a surprise is that result, Finlay? Or is it a surprise?
The result is a little bit of a surprise. Aberdeen are very much a side out of form. Hibs looking marginally better every week. They have two very impressive wins from them. And I know David Gray's received a lot of criticism. He was very, I think it was brave to play two wing backs to change his system again. They looked actually quite good at going forward. Like Aberdeen just let themselves down. The defending was so poor. Like they can play a killer ball. From midfield to the final third, they will worry any team that sends players forward. It's just three individual moments of lack of concentration, just that kind of Neil Warnock style Aberdeen defending, just let them down. And I don't know what they can do. It's not like a case of injuries, it's not a case of fatigue. I don't think they played last week. They just maybe need something to freshen them up in. The winter, I think maybe the return of Mitov and Papagei is going to make such a massive difference. But all credit to Hibs. Elyouan is a player transformed, I think. And Nicky Cadden continues to play the role of Mr. Hibs. So, very much a deserved win. Maybe a bit of a surprise.
If you look at Hibs, right, their last win before, so they've went on a run since just the end of November, right? But their last win before that, I think, was on the 14th of September to St Johnstone. In that period, they lost to Rangers, they lost to Motherwell, they lost to Dundee United, they'd drawn to Hearts, drawn to Ross County, and drawn to Dundee United, lost to St Mirren and to Dundee. Then they got that positive 3-3 result at Easter Road against Aberdeen. They kicked on and they smashed Motherwell 3-0. They then lost to Celtic, which, okay. Then they went on and had a good win against Ross County and then followed that up with the weekend's win over Aberdeen. Back earlier on in the season, we would come on and we would talk about David Gray and we'd say, where are we thinking? Do we think he's going to make it to another week? The Hibs board stuck with him. They could have stuck or twist and they chose to stick. That just kind of shows you that sometimes you can't overreact to results this early into the season. What'd you say, Robbie?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Hibs's recent form suggests, I feel like we've kind of been saying it a little bit this season, prior to the last maybe 4 or 5 weeks for Hibs, that they weren't actually playing that badly in some of their games. They were just struggling to score goals, where it seems like they've also seem to have maybe ironed out a few of these little defensive errors as well, and are now starting to score. Consistently, they've scored 3 goals in the past 5 games. So I think that's a massive, massive boost for him. In terms of Aberdeen, I think Well, when I was watching this game, I was kind of unsure whether it was a case of was it Hibs playing well or was it Aberdeen playing poorly, and I was kind of came to the conclusion that it was probably a little bit of both. I think that Aberdeen were really, really bad in possession, especially in midfield. They were so easily dispossessed. But I think that also probably did come down to the fact that Hibs were pressing really, really well, and then really, really their counter-attacking play was brilliant yesterday. So there's definitely a lot to be hopeful about if you're a Hibs supporter. Hopefully they can kind of keep this up through the Christmas period. But yeah, worrying if you're an Aberdeen fan, because the Christmas period has not been kind to them.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree with that. That result obviously meant with a Rangers win at Ibrox against Dundee that Rangers would jump into second. It didn't look all as if it was going to be go to plan for Rangers the first half. It just felt like Dundee had got themselves in the way, made sure that they were quite nice and compact, and tried to really be difficult to break down. Straight into the second half, Vaclav Cherny makes it 1-0. I think it was 46 minutes he scored on, so he must have scored literally right after the restart. If you're Tony Docherty, you're thinking all that hard work in the second half and the first half has gone down the pan. Now it's on to a massive second half, and when you think Rangers have gone 1-0 up, well, you're thinking that game's going to end 2, 3, 4, 5, but it didn't. A positive result for Rangers after last weekend's defeat in the Premier Sports Cup final to Celtic. But do you think Philippe Clement will be? Do you think he'll just be happy that his team have now got into a good way in the league and now they're winning and they've came into second place, Archie?
Yeah, I mean, this game, of course, was the 125th anniversary at Ibrox, so I suppose there's at least a nice sentiment to the win, but it's a very tired game, isn't it? I mean, it's four shots on target of their 21, and most of those came off the frame of the goal, but it's still a long, arduous affair to be able to walk away with 3 points. I thought Kearney's goal was really well taken. The half-time orange slices obviously worked well, but he picked it up and he took it really well, but I think too many opportunities squandered, but Dundee just didn't have that potency, I suppose, to return what Rangers were lacking. But it's what you need to win football games, and a win could have put them back in that top six discussion, but it's just not to be. So, yeah, no, I think it's really important that Clermont's side came off with that win, especially after the loss in the League Cup. But I think it's just back to business for Rangers now, see what they can do at the head of that table, and yeah, hopefully, see. A competitive end to the Scottish season, or at least going forward.
Yeah, it takes us into that interesting period. The team that have been top at Christmas have gone on to win the league in 11 out of the last 12 seasons. 2021, Giovanni van Bronckhorst Rangers were 6 points clear of Ange Postecoglou's in-transition Celtic side, but Celtic ran out to win that league come May. So in 11 out of the last 12 seasons, the league kind of feels like, okay, if you're top at Christmas, you know what's coming. There's still a 9-point gap. Both teams still have to play each other another 3 times, one on the 2nd of January, but it absolutely is pivotal that they've started to pick up points at the right time. Would you agree with that, Finlay?
No, definitely. I think it was a, fair to say, it was a disastrous start to the season by their own standards. But these are good results. I know. See, when Celtic win games like these are the games, or even in any other league, when you're top of the table, you get wins like that. People call them, championship wins. Or like these are the games that champions win 1-0 when it's difficult. And I think that was an important result for them. I'd say it definitely should have been more. Hit the crossbar 4 times is insane. I mean, some of them were closer. Hadji skimmed off the top of the crossbar. Tavernier was unlucky not to get his free kick. And then, I mean, worst of all, Eggemann misses a point blank shot. Should have put that away. But I think he has plenty of credit in the bank to get away with that. But I think if there was anything to take from that, it was, should have obviously won that more comfortably. Just a kind of casual way about the kind of casual way they went about this game. Should have really seen it out. I know Ross McCausland had a chance and should have put it away. It just seemed as if they weren't hungry enough for that next goal. And I thought, oh, we're winning. But, you know, a win's a win. And I think the next two games, they should come away with 6 points. So it's not, oh, it's not, the title is, I think, out of their hands. But I would say this is an important win for them, and they got it.
Okay, let's move on to today's game. It was Dundee United versus Celtic. Celtic coming off of, you know, a week where they've had a week to rest up after their League Cup final or the Premier Sports Cup final win. You know, the first objective of the season has been completed. Take time, rest and reset. In that time, they've lost James Forrest, Nicol Koon, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Alistair Johnston and Austin Trusty out through illness and injuries. I think James Forrest is going to be the longest of that. He's out for 6 weeks. Alistair Johnston out with a hip injury. Nicol Koon, I believe, has a sore knee. And Carter Vickers and Trusty out with illness. Going into that game today, most people would have still said Celtic have enough squad depth that they're going to be able to still come out on top. However, a resolute Dundee United performance and well, you know, drilled Jim Goodwin's side held the champions to a draw. I don't think there's really much to talk about in this game. It was a pretty drab affair. You looked at Celtic and the way that they were playing. It was quite tippy-tappy passing, not really much movement out. Dundee United were comfortable forcing Celtic out to the wings because they knew they could Ryan Strain could handle Daizen Maeda, and I think it was Will Ferry that was up against Yang. They felt comfortable being able to defend that way, and they blocked through the middle. So Celtic really didn't they didn't really create much until that Kyogo chance late on. It really was a dull, drab affair, and you try to think that could Dundee United have gone and snuck it at the end, and again they didn't really create too many opportunities themselves. Two shots, two on target throughout the whole game. I think Celtic had 17 and three on target. It wasn't a pretty game to watch. Finlay, what was your assessment?
Maybe a bit of post-trophy fatigue, bit of a come down from Celtic, definitely a bit of a lackluster performance. And I think Brendan Rodgers has such high standards, he'll be expecting a lot more. You mentioned all the players who were absent, but you know, Celtic obviously have fantastic squad depth. They have great options from the bench. But I don't know if you personally have been impressed by the way these replacements like Luke McCowan, like you mentioned, Yang. Ralston, when they step in, I don't know if you've what you've made of their performance when being given the chance to come in and earn themselves a starting place.
I thought Luke McCowan, for how he played, he doesn't look like a player that the jersey doesn't shrink to fit him. It's almost as if he's managed to fill that jersey. He seems like a player that is. He just seems like a really good player for Celtic. He doesn't look as if he doesn't fit, and he knits the game well, like together so well. Him and Callum McGregor seem to have like a great relationship, and even the way the passing and the fluidity, like it just feels like he's been there for the longest time. Then you talk about guys like Yang and Ralston. I thought both were pretty bang average, to be quite honest. Ralston's been at Celtic now for nigh on, you know, in the first team since 2017. You know, he's played in a couple of big games, but is he really that quality that Celtic need? Alistair Johnston, we know he streaks ahead of him, but is he the kind of backup that Celtic need? Or can Celtic go out and find a better backup option? I think they can. I don't think he's that good enough backup option. I think people will say that because he's a Celtic fan and you know he's been at the club for you know for a number of years, but I don't think that means anything. I think that's just sentimental garbage, and I'm not a part of that. I don't like that in football. So that's my personal take. I thought Yang this season actually has developed into a better player than what he was last season, but again, While I see there's growth there, I don't think he's again a good enough backup option to Nicholas Kuhn or James Forrest. He didn't really do anything today, and you know there was a couple of times where he got the ball passed to him and it went out of play. One where Luke McCown literally chauffeurs the ball over to him and he runs away from it and the ball goes out. And you're, I don't know. He's a head scratcher of a player. Could be a player in there, but I think Celtic fans have yet to see it. Stephen Welsh was the other man that came in. One thing I'll say about Stephen Welsh, really like him. I think he's a really comfortable player, comfortable on the ball. Don't know if anyone else noticed this, but his passing ability is unbelievable. The amount of times he zips a ball into a player from a centre back trying to move the ball from defence to attack, I think he does that really well. So again, Stephen Welsh, not really, you know, I don't think many people have any complaints with him. He did his job. Him and Liam Scales did their job well today. So yeah, I don't think anyone will care too much. Does anyone feel like they want to disagree with that?
Oh, I mean, my only comment on that would be, what is Stephen Welsh still doing at the club? I mean, I know Anthony Ralston is not going to be spoiled for choice, but Stephen Welsh is a good player. He is not getting nearly enough of the game time he should be as a 24-year-old. You know, he's had a loan spell at Greenock. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. Definitely a player who should be maybe getting out and getting some experience. I think he, I mean, this is a topic for another time, but I think Stephen Welsh is symbolic of a kind of the type of player who would rather be at a big club and be on the fringes than actually test themselves with a lesser name. And I think maybe that's a reason why he's not. I know Celtic have kind of pushed back a lot of offers, but it's maybe a reason why he's not knocking on the door of the senior setup at the Scotland team.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could agree with that. I think, you know, we talk about Ralston. I thought Ralston should have moved on from Celtic under Ange Postecoglou. Stephen Welsh, there is a player there. I guess it's just on him to want it enough at Celtic. And if not, if he knows that that's not going to be the case, then want it somewhere else and go and play at the best level you possibly can. Football's it's a short career. You don't get long and you want to try and make the most of that, I think. Archie, talk to me. Dundee United's performance, it was resolute, it was strong, it was. I don't think Walton and goal had much to deal with. What were we thinking?
Yeah, I mean, they were always going to have very little to show in the game, weren't they? I think they kept a really good shape, particularly the defence. Impetus was definitely on them. I think even if the attack had brought something to show, it wouldn't have been fruitful for them. I think Celtic would have probably just returned the favour. But I think a real testament to United's mettle was Rodgers said after that game that he thought Celtic never had a clear-cut chance. So I think they definitely deserve praise for that honest reflection on the game. But just while I'm touching on Celtic, I think, like we've said about their rotation, it's a really healthy rotation that they've got. And I think it just solidifies that Rodgers' side can leave the game locked if need be. And I think they had to do that this game. You know, you're not always going to get the free. And I think after a tiring League Cup win, they've earned a game where they don't poach the 3 points. So, yeah, definitely a testament to United's mettle, though, 100%.
I'll be honest, I'll disagree with Brendan Rodgers' comments because I think Celtic had a clear-cut opportunity when Adam Ida flicks a ball through to Kyogo. And for whatever reason, it's almost like he's in two minds about does he want to slam at home? Does he want to chip it over the goalkeeper? I don't know. £9 million, Adam Ida came on and felt like he made an impact to the game, whereas that ball, if I think that ball falls to Adam Ida, the ball's in the back of the net. Kyogo, for the goal scorer and talisman that he is, he's certainly not hit the heights at Celtic that he did under Ange Postecoglou. So, yeah, that's probably the only thing I would probably mention about that. But massive result for Dundee United keeps him in the hunt for Europe certainly. I think that result today, it will either keep them in fourth. Sorry, fifth, or it will move them into fourth, but it keeps them in fifth, just a point behind them. Motherwell, who took on Kilmarnock on Friday night. Now, the reason that I wanted to keep this game until last is because there was a couple of talking points in that. I don't know if anyone's heard about them. They seemed pretty significant. The game ended 1-1. It was a really great performance from both teams. Both teams really went at it. It was a spectacle on a Friday night. Speaking to a few Motherwell fans, they were saying they love a Friday night game, 7:45 in December. It's a classic. We want more of it. And it certainly set itself up to be. Liam Gordon scored for Motherwell in the 17th minute, but Paul Wirth equalised on the 74th minute for Kelly. I think that's his second time as a former Motherwell player. He scored at Fir Park and celebrated. Big fan of people that go to away grounds that they used to play for and celebrate. So, I don't know, always warms my heart. There was, however, a little bit of controversy in it. Kilmarnock denied what many think was a Stonewall penalty, and Dan Casey for Motherwell was sent off. Well, for what one person deemed to be violent conduct, I have yet to meet anyone that has said, "Nah, that was never a send. That was completely a sending off. It was the right decision." It brings us on to the topic of VAR. Since its introduction to Scottish football in October 2022, has it been a success for yourself, Finlay?
No, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I think it has a place. I am a big rugby fan. It has made a positive impact in the sport, but it had its teething troubles at the start. Took too long. Just fans didn't really know what was going on. Football still has that problem. It's not a money thing. Football has a lot more money. It's just structurally, it doesn't work. Fans at the ground have no idea what's going on. They can just replay it on the monitor, on the big screen, and the way it's set up is bothering me, and it seems to be the talking point in Scottish football every week when that really should just be background noise.
What about yourself, Robbie?
Think it's the same. It seems to have been the same for the past 2 years, both in Scottish football, English football. I just think I do like the idea of VAR because I think if you take VAR away, then you can still get a lot of dodgy decisions. But I just feel like it's the way that it's handled, the way the people behind it, the people in the VAR room, they're just not competent enough. And I feel like the rules are being changed all the time. And everything just seems so kind of inconsistent that it doesn't work. And there needs to be some kind of conversation about it because if used effectively, VAR should be very quick, very effective, and not really cause that much of a problem. But there seems to be something every single week. I don't know how that's changed, but something does need to be talked about because otherwise, I just don't see it getting any better.
Archie, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be fair to Robbie here. I was watching the overlap earlier and they had Howard Webb on, who's obviously the head of a VAR in English operations. And they had a Liverpool fan come on and ask him a question about the Spurs Liverpool game last season. Of course, the massive VAR controversy that denied a goal. But Howard Webb, when asked about what's the communication procedure for VAR, it doesn't seem competent enough. He just laughed it off and he said, "No, I totally agree with you." But like he said it like he was like a mate in the pub. There's kind of like a nonchalance about the topic, I think. And I think it's really disappointing where VAR's heading at the moment for what is meant to be such a invaluable tool to help the game overall. Like Finley said, like in games like rugby, it's obviously worked, but here we're not seeing that impact. And I think ultimately it does come down to communication. Where is that correlation with the fans and VAR? And what can we do to strengthen that? And I think that's at an all-time low at the moment, really, really weak.
So, head of referees for Scotland, Willie Collum, does the VAR review show with Super Scoreboard's Gordon Duncan every single month and has done since the start of the season. Great initiative, great idea. You get to see the decisions again and you get to hear the audio that comes with the VAR. Now, I watched the latest edition, no plug here, but it is on the Scottish FA's YouTube channel. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it because it's really insightful. Shows you communication around last week's decision and that obviously has caused a stir. But I want to just take you back, right? I want to take us back to St Mirren and Motherwell, right? John Beaton sends off Alex Gogic for a challenge where he completely and utterly wins the ball. And John Beaton, in his mind, before VAR is even into, before he's even, VAR even looking at this, he's in there and he's like, no. Absolutely reckless, fly straight in there. It's a red card. I know what I've seen. VAR come back and say, no, I think we should take a look at this, John. He wins the ball. Okay. That's fine, right? It's not a red card. He's won the ball. But the way he's won the ball, I'm going to book him. I don't agree with that style of refereeing because he's admitted two things here. He's admitted, okay, I got it wrong. But I'm going to show face here and still say that I think that's a bad challenge. So I'm going to book him, even though he's taken the ball. I disagree with that because in football, right, I just want it to be the way it should be played and the way it has been played for years, right? A player going in and winning the ball cleanly is not a foul, right? Maybe in the laws of the game, the laws seem to change all the time. But for me, that was not a yellow card. It wasn't a foul, never a sending off. But he backed it up his decision by being like, I'm going to yellow card them. Then you look at the VAR audio from the game last week, where Alan Muir and his assistant are communicating between themselves whether or not it's a foul, whether or not it's on the line. Apparently, during this conversation, the assistant VAR is writing down, doing paperwork, is him and Alan Muir are trying to come to a decision around. Is this on the line? Is this in the box? Where did this start? Is it a penalty? And ultimately, for most, they come to the wrong decision. VAR's there to help, right? And in the instance of the St Mirren game with Motherwell, it absolutely saves St Mirren because he should never be down to 10 men. But then in instances last week, John Beaton again catches, there's a foul there, but he's unsure if it's in or outside the box and he's asking VAR to help. I don't know the words to describe how I feel about VAR because in one instance it can be so good, but seeing the other instance it can be absolutely dreadful, and it comes down to two things. It doesn't actually. It comes down to one thing: the referees in general, those on the park, those in Clydesdale House. Incompetent is a word I would use, and I feel bad for Willie Collum. Because you can see he wants it to become more fluid. He wants it to become more communicated. He wants it to be a better process. But I think he's just got the wrong guys in there. And personally, I don't know what you do. You can't sack this equipment off because you've paid and you've invested a lot of money into it. But I don't know how you make it better. I genuinely don't. I raised your point earlier, Finlay, and I'm going to let someone jump in here now because I feel like I'm monologuing here. But your point earlier around if we didn't have VAR, we'd still have these decisions and they would still not be, it wouldn't be the greatest experience. But considering that's how it was for years, you could almost suck up a decision and be like, okay, do you know what? You got it wrong. Human error. See, when you've got VAR and they're still getting the wrong decision, you can't really be like, you can suck it up. It's human error because at that point it's not. You've got the advantage of double checking. Is this the right decision? And they still get it wrong. That's not error. That's not a human mistake. That's just incompetence. Don't know if anyone disagrees.
I think it's spot on, to be honest. I think the only way that VAR can get better is by there being a major overhaul of officiating officials, referees, people in the VAR rooms, because it just does seem like none of them are competent enough. And the annoying thing is that as a, I've never refereed a game of football in my life, yet you'll watch it on the TV and you'll be like, that is the most obvious penalty, but that is the most obvious, non-penalty you've ever seen, yet the referees somehow will go and make the other decision. But I do think that, to be honest, I do think a big part to play in it is the fact that they are constantly changing the laws of the game. I really don't think it helps because you've got, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but if you've got one thing is the law last season, and then that gets changed this season, then it just causes more confusion, and especially within fans who just it just seems like no one really knows what's going on, including the officials. So I think there needs to be a standardized set of laws that are stuck with for a decent period of time, and I do think that there needs to be a real look into an overhaul, really, of the actual officiating staff in the Scottish Premiership and in the Premier League in England as well, to be honest.
Well, you look at the handball rule, that gets changed. That feels like it changes every season. I don't think anybody in football now no longer like knows what is a handball. A handball to me is someone that's in purposely put their hand out, right, or move their arm in an unnatural position towards the ball. That's a handball, right? But then you get into the whole chat about the distance between the player that's kicking the ball, the player that the ball hit. In the distance between him to the ball, you then get, you got all these different sort of scenarios where you're like, oh, okay, well, do you know what? I don't think that is a penalty. Yeah, it definitely touches his hand, but no, isn't anything you can do about it? It's just so subjective. See if we can just make it one comp, like one standardized way of this is this, and that's a booking, that's a sending off, that's a foul. Great, but when you've got a guy who's been a referee for so many years, sending someone off for not for for completely taking the ball, finding out, okay, he did take the ball, I thought he didn't, but I'm going to book him anyway because my ego is more important than anything else. I don't know, that just stinks to me. And I'm not trying to come at anyone here, but I don't know. You watch football, you pay a lot of money, you want to know what's going on, you want to know it's been invested correctly. And I don't think it is. And I know I'm meant to say impartial on these, but as someone that loves football, for the love of God, just I don't know what you do. I'd love to say Bennett. I would love to get rid of it. But I don't think you can. I just think we have to find a way to live with it and fundamentally just have it work in the best possible way, but I don't think we're seeing that. Finlay, Archie, any comments?
No, well,
Yeah, I don't
I've.
know. Oh, go on, Archie, go on.
Sorry. I just want to bring it to like the example today, obviously, not today, this weekend, obviously, with when Chris Graham was obviously deliberating over that red card with VAR. You can see how short the exchange is after he goes to the screen, and then how arrogant he is when he comes back onto the field and sticks with his decisions. So I think, of course, we've raised all these points about communication overhaul, but I think what it really comes to for me is there's a stubbornness about referees at the moment, and really a power dynamic, and that's really worrying for the game when you've got somebody who thinks that they're bigger than the players on the field just because that they make the decisions. It shouldn't impact the game in that way, and it's a really frightening concept when you've got somebody who thinks that they're above the laws and can almost, flex them whatever way that they want in a game. And I think, how do you treat that? I think it really comes back to retraining referees. Whatever pool of referees you get, you could just put them, sure, you could just overhaul them and put out a new batch onto the field, but ultimately then you have the same problem. You've then got people who are getting power hungry and going with the decisions that they want, rather than, like we've said, reflecting on what they've done and coming up with a better decision. So I think that it really comes back to training, education of these referees, to ensure that they're staying unbiased, and they're bringing that objectivity to the games, I suppose.
I think though, when you look at refereeing in Scotland, right, it's one of them. Brendan Rodgers criticised. I feel like I'm saying his name a lot tonight. John Beaton back in March said he believed he was incompetent. Brendan Rodgers said how he felt, and he was charged by the Scottish FA for bringing the game into disrepute. Right, you're not allowed to criticise the officials if you're a player or you're a manager. You're not allowed to do it, right? Then you get officials that, like the guy, the referee from Friday night, Motherwell and Kilmarnock, I think you said it was Chris Graham. You see the arrogance in his face when he's had that discussion with VAR. VAR have obviously they've said, "Hey, Chris, come over, take a look at this. This is what we think. What's your perception?" And he still then says, "Nah, red card, violent conduct." And he comes on and he hits out with that little gesture of "get off the park." You're not allowed to criticise him, right? I don't know how Willie Collum's going to go on to the January VAR review show, and we're going to see him defend that referee in particular, because I don't think there is any defending. I think it was a shocking decision. It was an arrogant decision, and it was a disrespectful, motion of the arm, being like, "Get off." Do you know what I mean? Like, I will always. Referees have the hardest job in football, right? Because irrespective of the decision they make and how subjective it is, someone somewhere is going to have a problem with it, right? But I think instances like this and that other incident that I've mentioned make it so much worse. Is it time that referees have to come out and after games are subjected to the same sort of press conferences that managers and players are subjected to after a performance? I don't think that'll ever happen, right? But it boggles my mind that even with all the support and training and that's in place for referees in Scottish football, that we still have to come on and we have to talk about them, because I think, I don't know, I feel like we'll talk about it till the cows come home. Finlay?
Sorry, no, you're. It's just, yeah, it's just so frustrating to talk about. And it's, I don't understand it. I mean, we've talked about the decision, the shirt grab, or like, it's not even an open hand around the neck. I would, listen, hand to the neck, red card. Hand, open palm, maybe to the chest. You can imagine like just under the neck that slides up. Yes, maybe a red card. I'm happy with that. It's just because it's like a closed palm that slides up and makes contact with the lowest part of the neck that it seems so comical and unnecessary. And I think it's maybe we won't just keep ragging on referees. Like you said, they have a tough time. But what you made a point, and it's an excellent one, with the conversations after the game. Just need to find a way to improve that dialogue between spectator, players, managers, and the referee. Don't force them out necessarily to have to explain every decision if that doesn't make them comfortable, if that won't work. But find a way to explain the thinking. And when your ideas are, when your thinking's kind of put out there, it makes you have to kind of reevaluate it in real time. If you know you're going to have to explain or justify your decisions after a game, for example, you won't be so quick to just go, nah, I was right with that. I'm gonna like persevere. So whatever that method is, and that's not necessarily going to come anytime soon, there definitely needs to be an improvement in dialogue.
Okay, I think the final point that I want to make tonight is around communication and VAR. We've all been in a football stadium where a decision happens, the game stops, the referee blows his whistle, blows up, hands up saying stop, hold on. The VAR are in saying delay, delay, delay. They're rewatching this decision, and then you get the stadium announcer saying, VAR checking possible penalty, checking possible red card, checking possible violent conduct, right? And you're standing there and you're thinking, God, what's going on there? Because you've not seen it. How frustrating. And I think people will get this, right? I think it's very frustrating that this happens, because you're standing there bewildered. I've got to the point now where when I go and watch football, I don't even celebrate a goal anymore. Unless it's a derby game and you lose all wind and all control of your emotions, I'll sit there. I won't even jump up and celebrate, because I'm instantly always thinking VAR is going to intervene here, because it always seems to be the case. I remember when I used to go and watch the games, and you would celebrate and you would quickly stop, look to the linesman, and see if a flag's up, and then you would keep celebrating. You can't do that with VAR because you have to wait, because it takes them an absolute age to decide this has happened, this is the attacking phase of play, I think there's a foul there, or it could be offside. It takes far too long. There is no communication with it other than checking this, checking that, checking this, checking that. It has to be so much better. What's your thoughts, Robbie?
I agree. I do agree. The only thing I think is I don't know how you implement that. I think it's easier in stadiums, I think, that have screens, because then sometimes I think they can actually show what I mean you're seeing on the TV, I suppose, on the screens in the stadium, but not every stadium has a screen, not every stadium will have a screen. That kind of already ruffles things up. I totally agree. I think it needs to be much quicker. It needs to be much more transparent. But I'm not sure how they actually go about doing that. Do they get on the tannoys and say things? But then I feel like that would get more annoying than anything else, and fans would be hating that as well. So I don't know how the actual communication between referee or VAR official and fan actually happens when you're inside the stadium. It's a difficult one to kind of wrap your head around, I think.
I would personally, I would mic the referees up so that you can hear the decision and what's going on between them and VAR. If there's a way that we could mic them up and that communication's made clear in the stadium for these decisions, I think that would be a perfect way to sort of get around all the ambiguity of what's going on, what's being said, because there is no communication for the people that spend hundreds of thousands of pounds every single week to go and follow their team and to support their team, whether that's on tickets, on accommodation, on boats, buses, trains, food, merchandise, whatever. It's a small price to pay for the amount that fans and supporters pay, because right now the communication is, it's not even bang average, it's below where it should be. And when you consider what era we're currently in and the way technology works, why not? What is stopping it? Is that a far-fetched idea? I don't know. Finlay?
No, I definitely support the idea of miking referees up, and I'll refer back to rugby, not only because you can hear the decisions in real time, but also for another issue that's, slightly off topic, which is the way players talk to referees, which I think is actually, if you actually had the games mic'd up, you'd find it completely shocking. So maybe that would help referees feel safer in games, less pressure. I don't think it's a bad idea at all. I think maybe the kind of footballing governing bodies are worried about what would be said or what would be picked up, but maybe that would help change attitudes towards referees in game.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk all night about this, right? And the only reason I wanted to bring it up is because it has been such a bad week for referees in Scottish football. And you think after Willie Collins' VAR review show, where he has to come out and almost apologise to Rangers for them not getting a penalty, then Chris Graham goes and makes an absolute howler on two occasions. And even though in one instance it sounds, even maybe in both instances, he's helped out by VAR, but he still chose to send a player off for something that wasn't a sending off. I don't know. I don't know where we go from it, but we could be here until the cows come home. We could be here until 4 o'clock tomorrow when these good people settle down, load the podcast up and give it a listen. We could talk about it all day long. But we're gonna stop it here. Just want to say a massive thank you to Finlay, Archie, and Robbie for joining us this week on the podcast. There has been a dramatic change at the bottom of the table. St Johnstone and Ross County now occupy the relegation zones that were previously filled by the two clubs in Edinburgh. Aberdeen have lost traction against lost traction to Celtic at the top of the table and have found themselves in third place as Rangers fire right up into second place, 9 points behind Celtic. Scottish football at its best. Merry Christmas from everyone at Scottish Football Covered.